You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another new week of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790. Apologies for being away for a few days. It's been Thanksgiving break. I enjoyed time with my family and friends. Hope you guys did as well. But now everything's back to work. Rockets are back in business. Started Friday night in Sacramento, first game of a five-game road trip. So with them back in business, we are back in business as well with another fresh new week of Locked On Rockets. We'll talk about the entire road trip in just a few minutes. It's the first of a five-gamer, all against Western Conference opponents. But we'll lead off by recapping that Friday night game in Sacramento. Rockets won very comfortably, 117-104, moving to 10-6 on the year. First things first, let's give the Rockets credit for professionalism. They led this game by 29 points in the first half. Even though James Harden started off slow, he actually made just two of his first 12 shots. The Rockets were able, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, Pat Beverly made a lot of outside shots in the first half, built a 29-point lead. And if you're going up against a team like the Kings that you think you're better than, the best way to do it, to get the job done, is to not give them false hope. Because if you give that team hope, even if you're better than them, that's going to let the crowd in the game, they're going to build a little bit of momentum, and they're going to think, maybe this is their night. The Rockets, by getting up 29, sure, the Kings made a few little pushes. They got it as close as 10 or 12 a couple of times in the fourth quarter. But by and large, the Rockets controlled that game from the outset. And when you're a team like the Rockets, that's what you need to do. You're not seeing the lapses early in the season that you saw from the Rockets last year. Great stat to lead off the broadcast from Craig Ackerman, I thought, was pointing out the Rockets have followed up every loss this year with a win. In other words, they have not lost back-to-back games. And when you're trying to be a 50-plus win team, we'll get to that later in the show about what they need to do to get to 50-plus, which is probably a top five, maybe even a top four seed in the West, you can't go on long droughts. And the Rockets, every time they face adversity, they come out very focused. And we saw that again against Sacramento. It'd be very easy to overlook the Kings. You have a lot of big games, Portland, Utah, Golden State coming up. And the Rockets, just very methodically, they got off to a big start. And they controlled it throughout. So that's another sign, just as we've seen all year, that this Rockets team is a much more mature group than they were a year ago, and they are taking each game a lot more seriously. Now, of course, 10-6 on the year, and well ahead of that 50-win pace. Now, breaking down individual stuff from the Kings game, I'll start with Harden. He had another triple-double. That's great. 23 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds. It did get a little bit ugly. He was 6 of 18 from the field. We'll get to that in a moment. First off, I want to give him credit, 8 of 8 from the line. James Harden, whatever issues he had with free throws, those are long gone. After he missed 5 free throws down the stretch in Detroit, Harden is now 20 for his last 20, the two games against Toronto and Sacramento. So I think it's clear he put in the work at practice, at shoot-around. I saw him before the Toronto game taking extra work at shoot-around to work on his stroke. And it seems to have worked. Whatever was going on in Detroit, that seems to be in the rearview mirror, and I think we can all expect Harden to go back to being the 85-plus percent shooter at the line that he's been for pretty much his entire NBA career. And seeing how often he draws fouls, that's obviously a huge thing for his game and for the Rockets. Now, as far as his shooting struggles, I don't think every shooter goes through slumps, but I think what's going on with Harden is a little more than just missing shots. What I saw against the Kings was the same thing that I saw for a lot of the Toronto game. Teams are starting to defend him differently. They are taking away that lob. And so what happens now that they're rolling over and they're anticipating that lob to Capella or Harrell, number one, there are a couple of turnovers that come from that. But secondly, it often gets Harden in a weird position where sometimes defenders are sagging off to where he has to shoot, but he's not necessarily anticipating the shot. And what ends up happening is, well, an errant shot where he misses. I don't think it's a huge thing. The good news is that Harden, in both the fourth quarter of the Toronto game and the Sacramento game, he shot the ball much better. So what I think you're seeing is that as these games go along, Harden is feeling his way through it. It's nothing shocking. It's nothing that he can't handle. But by and large, he's used to the way teams have defended him for really the first 12 or 13 games of this year. And really, I'd say going back the last 4 or 5 years, because he has not been in this true, I just call it Steve Nash role. It's not just that he's a point guard. He's a point guard in a Mike D'Antoni offense with centers and Clint Capella and Montrezl Harrell that are willing to run the pick and roll until their legs fall off. Even when Harden was essentially the point guard in the Bickerstaff and McHale era, he didn't have that center that was so willing to run the pick and roll every play. So it is new. The league is adjusting to him, and now it's up to Harden to adjust to the adjustments. He is doing it. The fourth quarters of both the Kings and the Raptors games were a lot better. But, of course, what you want, especially as the Rockets play better teams, is for him to be able to make that adjustment from the first quarter onward rather than it take him some time to get into the game. I think he's fully capable of doing that. We all need to give him a little bit of patience, because I would say, really, this all happened just in the past week. The Detroit game was when I first started noticing how teams really started to defend differently, and I think part of it comes with boosting Clint Capella's minutes. To start the year, Nene played as much as Capella, maybe a little bit more. And it hasn't been until the last 2 weeks that Clint Capella has really been a 30-plus minute per game guy every game. And now you can see, including Friday night in Sacramento, D'Antoni's trying to sneak in a few minutes to Montrezl Harrell as well. And so you're seeing such a steady diet of that pick and roll, of those rolls from the center to the basket as Harden's making his move. And that's changing the dynamics of how they defend. And it's not a matter of being easier to defend. In a way, it's harder. It's just in some ways it makes the Rockets a little more predictable. So it makes the defenses a little more willing to commit to one particular way of defending. And so it's just up to Harden to say, okay, this is the new norm, and here's how I need to attack it. And it's something that he can't do. We've seen it in the fourth quarter of the last two games. He's just got to do it more consistently. And I would say Sunday night, tonight, is a great opportunity for him to get some confidence against a Portland team led by Damian Lillard, not a very good defensive player at all. It seems like a great setup for the Rockets to get some more mojo going offensively. Because while they scored 117 points Friday night in Sacramento, it was not necessarily a great offensive showing. It was more that they made a lot of threes. Ariza was 6 for 11, most in the first half. 21 of 50, just a historically high total of both made and attempts from behind the arc. But the made three-point shots kind of offset that the bread and butter of the offense, what Harden does and what the rolling centers do, was not quite as efficient as you would like. So against a poor defensive team in Oakland, that's a good, it feels like a good get-right game, at least offensively. Now, it's not going to be easy for the Rockets to win. I'll get to that in a couple of minutes when I preview the schedule. But Portland at 9-9, I do think they're a little bit undervalued. They're going to come into this game kind of, like a wounded animal. And in Portland, which is always a tough place to play, that's dangerous. But at least from an offensive standpoint, I think it's a good opportunity to correct some of the issues that we've seen against Detroit, Toronto, and Sacramento. Now, besides Harden, and of course we touched on Trevor Ariza, 18 points on 6 of 11 from 3. By the way, it's amazing. Ariza, 6 of 11, every shot that he took was from behind the 3-point arc. So if that doesn't reflect the new age Houston Rockets, I don't know what will. But besides those two guys, I really thought this was a huge night for Clint Capella. He went up against DeMarcus Cousins, 17 and 10 in 30 minutes, 2 blocks, plus 11. Ignore DeMarcus's stat line. I know DeMarcus had 32 and 9, but he was a negative 15. And as I said on Friday night, what DeMarcus Cousins did, that was basically a Blake Bortles performance. He threw in 4 or 5 threes in the fourth quarter after the game was decided, made his stat line look good. Yeah, he scored 32 points, most in garbage time. It took him 22 shots to get there. By and large, Clint Capella outplayed him. You could see that his length was something that Cousins did not anticipate. Or I should say, it's a combination of his length and his surprising strength, which has not been there for Capella in the past. Now, Cousins does outweigh him, and you could see that Cousins' game plan, when he started, he tried to, spread the court and attack with his body, basically to create separation. But the difference is that Clint is, he's not as strong as Cousins, but he's strong enough to stay close enough to Cousins that he can either block the shot or significantly alter it. And that is not what Cousins expected. Cousins thought that with the weight advantage and what he knew of Clint Capela in the past, that he could simply, in a one-on-one scenario, just physically overwhelm him and create enough space with his strength, with his weight advantage, that the length wouldn't matter. Instead, Clint is strong enough now that even if he can't push Cousins away from the basket, he is strong enough to hold his own and to where his length can take effect. And you could see that frustrated the hell out of DeMarcus Cousins. He expected this to be a lot easier, but even when, you know, he used his rare combination of speed, power, and quickness, Capela, he was able to, you know, he was strong enough to stay close enough to get his arm up there, and he's long enough to still make an impact, actually blocked a couple of those shots. So I would say, by and large, Clint Capela outplayed DeMarcus Cousins in this game. I don't care what the box score says, although if you look at the plus-minus, certainly Capela plus 11, Cousins minus 15, that tells you a little bit of the story. But this was a very encouraging performance, again, for Clint Capela against one of the elite bigs in the NBA. And again, we've seen that for 2 weeks now. Rudy Gobert, Steven Adams, Joel Embiid, Andre Drummond, Valanciunas, now DeMarcus Cousins. This has been a wonderful two-week stretch for Clint. Another 30-plus minute game, only two fouls against DeMarcus Cousins. I can't say how impressive that is, because we all know a big part of DeMarcus Cousins' game is trying to go hard at the rim and get fouls, because he can make his free throws, and Clint did not even do that. He was able to defend without fouling. So I can't say enough good things about it. One other thing I should mention before we move on to previewing the schedule, another great game for Pat Beverly, heart and soul. The stat line won't stand out too much, 7 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, but he does so much of the little things. I posted on Twitter, there was one sequence where the Kings were leaking out. It seemed like they were going to have a fast break dunk when they were trying to cut the lead, you know, really get some traction, and Beverly just straight up took it from the guy who was starting the fast break and managed to find Decker, who then found, I can't remember if it was Zanea or Capela, for the jam. I think it was Capela, but it's the kind of heart and soul play that they need from Pat Beverly. It's the grit that Mike D'Antoni talked about, and above all else, I would say it's a winning culture play. That's a play that winners make. They find ways to get those free points here and there, and that's how you prevent the Kings from getting on a run. Now, yes, the Kings got it closer. Certainly the Rockets did not win this game by the 29 points that they led by in the first half. But the Kings aren't that bad. No NBA team is, save maybe the 76ers. They were going to make a push, but they never made it really interesting, and that's because even when the Rockets missed a few shots, they were not as efficient as you would necessarily like. They were able to make key swing plays when they needed it. The Beverly plays like that. Also, the Beverly 7 rebounds, that's a huge deal. Especially, I've noticed, in the Nene minutes, because you know Nene and Ryan Anderson, the Rockets have some bigs that can't get what I call the athletic rebounds. The rebounds where the ball bounces off a long way. You know, Nene and Anderson, they are more space rebounders. They're very fundamentally sound. They understand technique. They can box out, but they just can't get off the ground quickly enough to, you know, get a shot that caroms in a weird way. And that's where having a guard that can rebound, like Pat Beverly, we've also seen it from time to time with Trevor Ariza, that helps you so much. Because if you get those types of rebounds, it gives you second chances offensively, and it prevents the other team from having an opportunity to really go on a big run. And the rebounding from the likes of Beverly and Ariza, that's why the Rockets have been, in my opinion, a surprisingly good rebounding team this year, even with some of those deficiencies up front, because they're getting a lot of the team rebounds. Very last thing I should point out, Corey Brewer, let's give him credit. He has been an excellent player for the last 2 or 3 weeks. He struggled to start the year. We all piled on him. Friday night, 4 or 5 from the field in his 13 minutes, including 2 of 2 from 3, plus 9 in 12 minutes, 10 points. That's a very solid outing for him. Again, even made his 2 threes. I know everybody's frustrated about why can you not find time for KJ McDaniels, but remember, this is a very deep team. You also have Sam Decker, who's played well. You have Eric Gordon, who made 4 threes on Friday night. And, of course, Harden, Beverly, Ariza are your starters. It's not easy to get minutes. In a vacuum, there are periods where you could say that KJ outplayed Brewer. But lately, Brewer's been good on defense. He's been efficient offensively. And the one thing that I would always say in support of Corey, even at his low points this year, those two Spurs games, but I think he was like 1 of 10 or something crazy, he never took what I would consider bad shots the way that Corey Brewer did a year ago. Corey Brewer has always been under control this year. Now, he was missing a lot of his looks, but he was not forcing the issue. He was not taking bad shots. And so that, to me, that's a very positive thing when you look at predictive value. Because even when he's struggling, guys miss shots. They go through slumps. The key is he forcing it? That's when you know someone is mentally rattled. He told me he was very comfortable in the offense. He was taking the right shots. They weren't going in. He believed they would in time. He since brought in his high school shooting coach, I believe. Results have been a lot better. And, you know, if he has another bad stretch, because certainly he's not a lights-out shooter by any stretch. This is a guy who, on average, is just going to shoot low 40s from the field, probably upper 20s from three. So if he gets cold again, then yeah, maybe you do look at KJ McDaniels as an option. But for now, when he's on a hot streak, you take it and you ride it because you know he's going to give you something defensively. You know he gives you a spark in transition, some defensive abilities, especially with his energy. And, you know, you ride the hot streak on offense while you have it. And we can talk about KJ McDaniels if and when it starts going the other way. But for now, give Corey Brewer credit. He's playing excellent basketball for this team. Now, to close out the show, I'm going to look ahead at this week. It's going to be a challenging week for the Rockets, as any week with four road games would be. They're in Portland Sunday night, in Utah Tuesday night, Golden State on Thursday night, and Denver on Friday night, all on the road. And the Rockets entered this, of course, at 10-6 overall and 1-0 on this five-game West Coast road trip, which is their longest of the season, I believe. So, the thing that really frustrates me about this road trip, the Denver loss kind of screams schedule loss. Second night of a back-to-back in the altitude. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how Mike D'Antoni manages minutes. Because I have a feeling if this were the Spurs, that Warriors game on Thursday night is a classic game where Greg Popovich would sit most of his regulars. Because you know what? You play the Warriors in Golden State, you're probably going to lose that game no matter who you play. That's just how damn good they are. So you don't want to let it beat you twice. So maybe you just, you know, almost concede and save up for the second night of a back-to-back so that Denver does not turn into a schedule loss. Now, that's not going to happen with the Rockets. Mike D'Antoni has not shown any tendency other than Nene to rest players. And you know the likes of James Harden, Pat Beverly, Trevor Ariza, these guys are cutthroat competitors. They want their shot against the Warriors. They know people are going to be watching. And I understand that. You've got to give them their opportunity. Good news is that other than that, the games are spaced out this week. It's not like four games in five nights. It's 4-6. So it's a little bit, but it's nothing terrible. But I would say the Golden State game, you're going to have to watch closely. Sure, you can play Harden 38, 40 minutes. If you are actually in the game and have a legitimate chance to win, then yeah, you go after it. But if Golden State gets a, I would even say a 12, 15 point lead by the third quarter, you might have to think long and hard about exactly what you ask of your starters because you want to, you want to make sure that this Denver game, which like Sacramento, is one that you should win. I would say the road trip breaks down into five-game road trip. One game you shouldn't win, that's the at Golden State. Two games you should win, Sacramento and Denver. And two toss-ups, that's Portland and Utah on the road. So you want to make sure you take care. I would say a goal is 3-2, because if you're 3-2, you get out of the road trip and out of the first 20 games of the year at 12-8. And if you're at 12-8, I think you're very happy with that because number one, you're at a 600 winning percentage, and a 600 winning percentage, that's right on course to win 50 games. 50 out of 82, that's actually just a tiny bit above 600, but basically that's a 600 team winning 49-50 games and being potentially top five, maybe even top four of the West and having home court in the first round. So if you're 12-8 in the first 20 games, you're on course for that, and I would argue that considering the first 20 games, 14 have been on the road. If the Rockets finish this at 12-8, I would say they're ahead of schedule as far as being a as far as being a 50-win team, because winning, you know, being a 600 club with 14 of 20 on the road, that is really impressive. So the question is, how do they get there? Getting to 12-8 means going 3-2 on this swing, and they're 1-0 now. So basically, it means getting a minimum of two wins in these next four. So that means you need to make sure you take care of that Denver game, and then get one of the two in Portland and Utah. Hopefully you get greedy and you get both, but for sake of argument, I'm going to say let's focus on splitting those two and taking care of business against Denver. To take care of business against Denver, you got to be careful with that Golden State game. If it becomes a game where, you know, you play your absolute best and you have a shot to win it, then by all means, certainly beating Golden State there, if it's somehow doable, would be an enormous psychological boost for this team. The reality, it's a long shot. So I would expect Mike D'Antoni, I don't think he's going to rest anyone other than maybe Nene. You know, maybe with Denver being more likely, maybe you rest Nene on the front end of the back-to-back rather than the second. That's just me thinking out loud. But other than that, you've got to be very careful so that you can still come back on Friday night in Denver with the requisite energy to take care of that game and hopefully at a bare minimum give you a second win on this road trip. Now, Portland and Utah, these are two teams that you have already beaten this year. Portland on paper certainly seems easier. They've had a ton of defensive issues, as I talked about earlier. The bad news, they're a bit of a wounded dog. They're 9-9. They have underachieved to this point in the year, and they are they're better than their record. They certainly have a ton of scoring talent. The Rockets at times have had their issues on the defensive end of the court, so I would not assume this win. However, it's certainly one that I think you feel a little bit better about because the Jazz, even though the Jazz didn't have a full complement of players, they created some problems for the Rockets in Houston. Now, the Rockets were able to win that game by 8 or 9. James Harden was tremendous in that game, but they were able to slow the pace significantly. Remember, NBA league average for possessions is right at about 96. Rockets tend to play faster than average, about 99. I believe Jazz Rockets possessions was 91. So they were very comfortable slowing that game, and that was without George Hill, who I believe will be playing this week. That was just with Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert. They were able to turn it into a half-court slugfest. So that game against the Jazz is particularly going to be a grind, I think. It's not one that the Rockets can't win, but it's going to be a little bit difficult. So I would say the Blazers is a little bit easier. Hopefully you can get that one. You just have to be aware. I would say it's a game where hopefully Pat Beverly's ready to go, because certainly the Blazers still have their issues defensively. I think the Rockets are going to be able to exploit them there. I think you're going to see Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum take this game very personally at home against a backcourt and Beverly and Harden, you know, they don't like. They are going to be very aggressive in this game and basically try and win this game themselves. And so hopefully this is a game. We've been seeing Pat Beverly get into better and better shape. It seems he's moving better with every game, playing more minutes. So hopefully this game where Pat can stay out of foul trouble and limit those two just enough to where the Rockets' success against a poor Portland defense can put them over the top. But big picture, I would say the goal for this road trip is 3-2. This is not an easy trip at all because three of the games, I'm just going to look at this from a Vegas standpoint. The at Portland, at Utah, and certainly at Golden State are likely games in which the Rockets are going to be underdogs. Two games against the Kings and Nuggets, you know, those are favorite games, but nothing overwhelming by any stretch of the imagination. Now, they did already get the Sacramento game, thankfully, so you take that out of the equation. What's done is done. But, you know, if you get a 3-2 road trip and get out of this at 12-8, you know, you're a 600 club after the first 20 games, basically a quarter of the year, and you'd be a 600 team having played 14 of 20 away from Toyota Center. Once we get to next week, there are going to be a ton of games at Toyota Center against really not great competition. So if the Rockets can get out of this week at 12-8 or somehow even better, then yeah, I think you feel really good about this team because in the next few weeks ahead, assuming no major injuries, you can really start to create some separation between the bottom tier teams and the Western Conference playoff picture and really put the Rockets as a team that is a serious contender for, you know, a 5 seed or higher, potentially a 4. And by the way, I would argue, you know, you look at the point differential, the Rockets are right up there. I know the Spurs are 13-3, but the Spurs as your 3 seed seem a little bit soft. Their point differential right now is plus 5.4, I believe. Warriors and Clippers are both in positive double digits. But after that, after the Spurs, it's the Rockets and the Jazz, both a little under plus 4. Rockets and the Jazz look like the 4th and 5th best teams in the West, and not very far behind the Spurs at 3. And then there is a big drop-off when you look at differential between the Rockets and the Jazz at 4 and 5, and then the rest of the standings, Memphis, Oklahoma City, those teams seem right about 500 in terms of differential, right about slightly above. And then you look at the bottom tier, actually the Blazers and Lakers are well under in terms of their differential. They're negative. So the Rockets right now, it's not just that they have a good record, their differential, everything about this team suggests that they are a legitimate top five team in the Western Conference. And so hopefully, you know, there's a big difference between 4 and 5 and being able to steal a game such as in Portland or in Utah that can potentially go a long way towards it can go a long way towards being the difference in the 4 or 5 spot and having home court in the first round. By the way, one extra thing with the Jazz game, I said that I think it's a more difficult one. I think that's the truth. However, the Rockets only play the Jazz 3 times this year. They're one of the rare teams in the West that the Rockets do not play 4 times. So if they already have one game won against the Jazz. So if the Rockets could somehow win this game in Utah, that would give them the tiebreaker on the Jazz already. And seeing as how, again, the Rockets and Jazz seem pretty clearly, at least statistically, to be the 4th and 5th best teams in the West after the Warriors, Clippers, and Spurs, having that tiebreaker in your back pocket could be very huge for the Rockets as the season moves along. Anyway, a lot to look forward to. We'll be talking with you again throughout the week, but since we've had a few days off, I wanted to, you know, take a little bit more of a big picture approach with this podcast and look at it from the standpoint of this entire road trip and where the Rockets are now, 16 games in the year, and later this week they'll actually be 20 games in, virtually at the quarter mark of this season. So again, thanks to all of you for tuning in. Thanks to all of you for you know, giving me a pass on these last few days. It's been Thanksgiving break. Again, I enjoyed it with my family. I hope you guys did as well. But it's back to business for the Rockets, and it's back to business for us here at Locked On Rockets, where we provide you with daily coverage of the team. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can certainly do that at Locked On Rockets. And you can also email us at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me or if you would like to inquire about potentially becoming a sponsor of this program. I'm Ben DuBose of Sports Talk 790. You can follow me at Ben DuBose. I'm your host. You can follow my written work at sports790.com. Just go to the Talking Rockets blog and you'll see tons of posts. My most recent one was a statistical breakdown of Clint Capella's breakthrough over these past couple of weeks. We're also a part of the Locked On Podcast Network. That's a great network of local podcasts covering all NBA and NFL teams. That means we also have an affiliate in Houston for the Texans, hosted by Robert Land. They've got a game today against the Chargers. If you want to hear post-game coverage of that, scroll on over to Locked On Texans, tune in, and Robert will have a post-game show for you later today. And if you haven't subscribed to us or left us a rating, please do. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom, Stitcher, wherever you consume your podcast or audio media. Just type in Locked On Rockets, subscribe, leave us a positive review. That's a big part of how we're able to sell ourselves to advertisers and how we're able to pay the bills and bring this show to you on a daily basis. So again, I'm Ben DuBose. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Welcome back from the Thanksgiving break, and I'll be chatting with you again throughout the week as the Rockets embark on this, or not really embark, they've already started, but continue on this 5-game West Coast road trip. Have a good day.